In fact, if we change the estimate for Nike's weighted average cost of capital from 6% to 8%, the estimated value of the company becomes $56 billion, substantially less than the current valuation. So what's the upshot? Well, if you believe Nike will grow at 4% or more each year, and their cost of capital will be closer to 6% than 8% going forward, Nike seems like a good buy. In conclusion, valuing stocks through discounted cash flow analysis integrates many of the concepts we have covered in this course. We start with free cash flows, derived from the statement of cash flows, and make projections of these cash flows going forward. We then estimate the company's weighted average cost of capital in order to properly discount projected future cash flows to their present values. We then compare the resulting present value to the firm's enterprise value and make conclusions from there. Well, all things must come to an end, and this about wraps up our introduction to accounting and finance. I sincerely hope that this course has made you feel more comfortable in your ability to read and interpret accounting data and the key financial statements, the income statement, balance sheet, and statement of cash flows. And by equipping you with the tools used by professionals in the fields of accounting and finance, I also hope that you've gained the confidence you need to make educated investing decisions, whether in your personal portfolios, professional lives, or both. It has been my distinct pleasure taking this journey with you, and I thank you very much.
These lectures are part of the Great Courses series. These lectures are titled Critical Business Skills, Organizational Behavior. Your lecture is Dr. Clinton O. Longenecker. Dr. Longenecker is the Stranahan Professor of Leadership and Organizational Excellence in the College of Business and Innovation at the University of Toledo. He is also a distinguished university professor. He holds a PhD in management from the Pennsylvania State University. Dr. Longenecker is an active management consultant, educator, executive coach, and motivational speaker who has received more than 40 outstanding teaching, service, and research awards. He also has published more than 180 articles in leading academic and professional journals and is the co-author of two books, Getting Results, Five Absolutes for High Performance, and The 2-Minute Drill, Lessons for Rapid Organizational Improvement from America's Greatest Game. This lecture is titled Achieving Results in Your Organization.
Imagine that you get hired for your dream job, whatever that dream job might be. You're very excited and you start work with a tremendous amount of motivation and energy. And 1 year into the job, it appears that things are going extraordinarily well. You love the company and the products it sells. You think you get along famously with everyone in your office, including your boss. And even though you're extremely busy, working long days and often coming in on the weekend, you don't mind because the job is so rewarding. So imagine your shock and dismay when you come into the office on a rainy Monday morning, early as usual, and your boss calls you into her office to tell you that you've been let go. How could this possibly happen? The answer just might be simple. You've misunderstood how your organization works and how to operate effectively as part of it. And you wouldn't be the first person in your organization to make that mistake. You see, human beings are social creatures, and human behavior within organizations tends to follow certain recognizable patterns. The field of organizational behavior was established to study those patterns and to develop practices for bringing out the best in people in the workplace. But nobody tells you about most of those practices when you join an organization. And once you're working away at a demanding job, it's very easy to lose track of what you really need to be doing to succeed in your position and to lead others to do the same. So in this course, I'm going to teach you the practices that are most important for your success within an organization, both as an employee and as a leader. The study of organizational behavior attempts to do two critically important things. First, it helps us understand why people behave the way they do at work. Now, we're not talking here about why your office mate leaves rotting food on her desk for days, or why your boss wears sunglasses around the office, or why people talk to themselves on elevators. We've all seen our share of strange behavior at work. In fact, these examples might be tame compared to what you've observed yourself, but that's not our focus. No, here we're talking about specific intentional behaviors that contribute to business success and business failure. Why are some leaders so much more effective than others? Why are some teams so productive? Why do people prefer to communicate with each other in very different ways? Why do some assignments and initiatives garner great enthusiasm while others meet apathy or even powerful resistance? These are the behavioral questions that the field of organizational behavior attempts to help us answer. Second, studying organizational behavior helps us discover what leaders and professionals can and should do to bring out the very best in the people that work in their organizations. In short, then, understanding organizational behavior is all about what I call creating people power. We look at the science of human behavior, and then, using our findings, we develop tools to help put people in the best position to succeed. Organizational behavior can help a leader create competitive advantage with people, and that's a vital skill for organizational success in the 21st century. So how can you acquire that all-important skill? Well, in this course, we'll look at a variety of key issues that can impact our ability to get work done and be successful in our places of employment. I like to call these topics that we will explore power factors, as the more you know about each, the greater power you will have to achieve better results for your organization and yourself. It's my goal to help you build a practical, hands-on toolkit of key practices that will improve your ability to get better results with and through the people you work with. And you may find that they're useful in other areas of your life as well. To get the learning process started, let me ask you to do a little self-analysis. What would you say are the most important factors governing your success in your career? My research group asked that same question to over 6,000 professionals from all over the world, and we got a lot of powerful feedback. Some professionals said that having strong decision-making skills was critical for their success. Some said it was essential to have a great work ethic and to be driven. Some emphasized strong communication skills and the importance of networking. But when we asked the same professionals to tell us the number one factor determining their long-term career success, the great majority gave us the exact same answer: developing a strong performance track record of delivering desired results. Results. We intuitively know how important results are to our success, but it's sometimes very easy to lose sight of that amidst everything else that we're doing and supposed to be doing, isn't it? Part of the challenge of functioning effectively in an organization is that we can all get caught up in the mountain of minutiae that permeates our jobs on an everyday basis. Whether it's handling constant interruptions, attending long and often fruitless meetings, or answering a never-ending stream of emails, the modern workplace almost seems designed to distract us from the all-important goal of delivering the results that our organization needs. We need to understand what all those distractions are doing to us if we're going to be able to put the focus back where it belongs. Let me ask you to visualize a continuum measuring how busy you are in your life on a typical day. As we move from left to right in the scale, we have the following categories: not busy, busy, really busy, and then too busy. Now, let's define each category before I ask you to assess where you are on this important scale. Not busy can be defined as living a quiet life with a minimum of activity. The demands of work are modest, leaving an abundance of free time with the absence of pressure or stress. Doesn't that sound wonderful? Okay, let's get back to reality now. Busy can be defined as the state of being actively and attentively engaged, living a life full of activities, responsibilities, and commitments. When we're busy, specific effort and attention is required to manage priorities, fulfill responsibilities, and meet deadlines. Really busy can be defined as being fully occupied in a particular activity, committed to something previously planned, and therefore unable to take on any additional activity or being engaged in constant, challenging, and ongoing activity. Finally, there's too busy. Too busy can be defined as finding oneself overcommitted, being in a state of constantly having more things to do than can be realistically accomplished, having a marked absence of personal time, or being in a constant and unrelenting state of action. So where do you find yourself on this busyness continuum? If you're like most professionals in the 21st century, you probably find yourself in the really busy category. And while that's a challenging spot to be in, it's unfortunately just a fact of life in today's business world. You might even say that you prefer being really busy because it makes you more focused and more organized. And that's a fair point, but to a degree. A growing percentage of working professionals can easily find themselves in the category of being too busy on a regular and reoccurring basis. In fact, it's not uncommon to conduct a management development program and find over 50% of the participants placing themselves in the category of being too busy. That means they're dealing with more than the occasional work crunch. They simply have more in their inboxes than they feel that they can handle. They're too busy to function and function well. And this can be draining, dangerous, and a very precarious place to be in. And let me tell you why. As part of a professional development exercise, I recently asked a sample of over 2,000 professionals to answer the following question. How does being too busy for an extended period of time impact you? My associates and I analyzed their responses and identified some rather troubling findings. Here's what we learned. When we are too busy, our ability to communicate breaks down and our listening skills diminish. We tend to lose focus and attention to detail. Problems that need our attention are left unresolved, or we simply ignore them altogether. Now, as you can well imagine, when we're not communicating effectively, we're losing focus and ignoring critical problems, relationships at both work and home can become strained and they can break down altogether. And I would be willing to bet that many of you have experienced this in your own lives. As this too busy pattern continues, our planning and organizational skills suffer. We often completely lose sight of the long-term goals and big-picture issues, and we even begin neglecting our health. What we ultimately find is that being too busy can cause us to become increasingly inefficient and unproductive. On a corresponding note, a careful review of these findings also makes it pretty clear that we just might not be the best or easiest people to work with when we're caught up in a downward cycle of being too busy. When taken together, all of these findings indicate that when we're too busy, we are less likely to engage in many of the key activities that will help us get desired results. Instead, we tend to focus on things that are the most immediate or the things that are thrust on us by day-to-day circumstances, things that just might distract us from doing the important work that delivers results. And remember that getting desired results was the number one thing that professionals identified as leading to long-term career success. By being too busy, it's quite possible that we're actively engaging in the activities that just might lead to our own career derailment. So here's the situation in a nutshell. Getting results is the key to career success and survival. Busyness is part and parcel of the landscape of the workplace in the 21st century. We can all border on being too busy at any given moment in time, and busyness can damage our ability to focus our time and talent on doing the things that lead to getting desired results. It sounds as if there's no way out, but the real question is, what is making all of us so busy? In my research, I've continually found that when people in the modern workplace are under great time pressure, they can easily find themselves engaged in a great many activities and undertakings that have little, if anything, to do with delivering desired results. Such activities run the gamut, from filing needless reports to complying with overly complicated internal procedures to participating in the umpteenth company morale-building activity. While these activities may be well-intentioned and there's some value attached to them, they can sometimes get in the way of the results that you need to achieve. When things in the workplace become increasingly pressurized, fast-paced, and turbulent, it's only logical to respond by trying to do the same work that we've been doing, only more quickly, or to develop more sophisticated and complex solutions to the logistical challenges that face you. But our research suggests that you'll be more successful by doing the exact opposite. In fact, when things in the workplace get crazy, it's imperative that you and I slow down and exercise self-leadership and leadership of others with greater precision, passion, patience, and persistence. In times like these, we and the people we work with need clear direction and purpose, meaningful information, performance feedback, teamwork, effective problem solving, and some assurance that things are going to be okay. All of these things can easily be lost or swept aside in the heat of battle when we're moving way too fast. Okay, you might be saying to yourself, you're telling me to slow down? That's easier said than done, right? Well, absolutely. In fact, we've asked business leaders to identify their most important resource time and time again, and the answer is time. But time is something that you can manage, so let's figure out how to get a better grip on it. Here's some advice that you can take to work tomorrow. Stop. And by stop, I mean S-T-O-P. Sit, think, organize, and then perform. This formula is based on decades of research that I've conducted on the practices of high-performing business professionals, and it provides a concrete solution to the formidable challenge of busyness. Stop is the process of slowing down and becoming more intentional and more mindful in the way you approach your work and your life. The stop process is all about thinking through what you're really trying to accomplish and developing an effective action plan to get things done by controlling the things that you can control. The idea is to make a periodic appointment with yourself to conduct what I call a strategic stop, a pause that puts you back in charge of your schedule. And the process is very straightforward. Sit quietly someplace where you won't be disturbed. And think about what you really need to accomplish as opposed to everything else that you're supposed to do that may be potentially less important. Organize yourself to place top priority on the results that really matter and then perform based on the priorities that you've established, checking your results to make sure that you're meeting your goals. When you conduct a strategic stop, you are in effect doing strategic planning for yourself to determine the results you need to achieve and the process that you will use to be successful. This means that you must sit and be still so you can properly think about the big picture of your performance. This in turn will allow you to properly organize your thoughts around your most critical activities and resources so that you can perform in an optimal fashion. Now, this might seem obvious, but it's amazing how often I've seen catastrophic breakdowns occur due to misconceptions and miscommunications about performance expectations. In fact, several years ago, I received quite a memorable email from a very successful business leader and a former graduate student of mine. I received his note the day after he'd been terminated from a vice president's position in a large manufacturing company. In that email, he painfully chronicled the things that he believed had led to his being dismissed from an organization that he loved. Listen carefully now to what he said. "I simply did not see being let go coming. I've been extremely busy at work the past 18 months. I mistakenly thought that my boss and I were on the same page. We never really articulated what we were trying to accomplish in realistic and measurable terms. I was busy, but obviously I wasn't doing the right things. My biggest mistake is that I failed to practice what I knew to be true." And then he said, "I have no one to blame for this mess but myself." Now, I think my former student was being very hard on himself. And the fact that he encouraged me to use his professional failure as a lesson in my classes is inspiring in its selflessness. But the lesson here is very valuable indeed. Had this young man taken the time to step back and look at the big picture of what he was doing, why he was doing it, and how well he was doing, there's a very good chance he would not have fallen prey to this major league career meltdown. So let's take a closer look at what an effective strategic stop looks like. A strategic stop requires that you have a monthly, quarterly, or semi-annual strategic planning retreat with yourself to think through and answer the following critically important questions. What specific results do I need to deliver in order to be successful? What specific activities and practices do I need to engage in to deliver desired results? Am I currently investing my time at work on the activities that deliver the results we need? Your specific answer to these first three questions will help you create real focus around what you are being paid to deliver in your current position that are critical to your success. Once you've established that focus, here are three more questions that you need to answer if you want to deliver the results that you've identified. Are my working relationships where they need to be to deliver superior performance and results? Is there a talent or skill that I need to be working on to improve my performance? Is there a problem or a barrier that's getting in the way of my performance that I need to fix ASAP? Having the working relationships to support what you're trying to do, developing the requisite skills to do your job, and taking specific steps to deal with the things that get in the way of performing your job are all things that you and I need to do if we are to achieve better results for ourselves and our employers. And here's one last question that is really important for keeping yourself focused on the results you need to deliver in order to be successful. How will I measure and monitor my ongoing performance at work to ensure that I stay on track? Now, don't underestimate the importance of this last strategic stop component, as it is imperative that all of us become more proficient at self-leadership to make sure that we're doing the things that will get us the results that we want and need. Establish and maintain a scoreboard for yourself to track the key performance metrics that are most important for your success, whether it's sales, customer satisfaction, some quality metric, meeting a deadline on a major project or the like. There's no substitute for always knowing where you stand on the results that you are expected to deliver, and especially when you are really busy. Now, there's lots of other questions that you might want to address as well, but I've found that taking the time to think through the key issues I've just identified is a critical self-leadership practice for all of us, as these factors are proven performance drivers. You can use your answer to these simple questions to create an initial plan of attack on the key issues that impact your performance. And if you like, you can always seek further improvement using additional questions later on. Now, once you've answered the strategic stop questions for yourself, it's time to sit down with your boss and share your plan. This will allow you to make sure that you too are on the exact same page as you seek your boss's input, create proper alignment, and open up critical channels of communication with him or her. Most bosses are really busy, and they will appreciate the fact that you are trying to help them focus on delivering better performance. So the STOP method is a great work habit for reducing your stress level and keeping your focus on what's truly important, while at the same time helping you build a better relationship with your boss. Okay, now you've got a good sense of how you can use the strategic stop to prepare yourself for long-term success. But if you're like many busy professionals, your work doesn't pile up monthly or quarterly, it overwhelms you on a daily basis. So let's look at how to use a daily stop to take control of your hectic schedule. In essence, a daily stop is just a more detailed, shorter version of the strategic stop, but paying attention to its details will pay big dividends. As with a strategic stop, the first step is simply to sit. Start each day by slowing down, being still, and finding a quiet and isolated place where you will not be disturbed. You just might need to get up a little earlier to make this time, and you just might need to find a place to hide. Research shows that sitting and relaxing in this fashion causes various pathways to the brain to open up, and doing this daily provides us better access to important stored information that we can use for handling the challenges of each and every day. Second, think. Now you need at least 15 minutes to refocus your thoughts from the urgent, pressing issues of the moment to the key activities of the day and the things you really need to get done. Wrap your thinking around the questions, what specific results am I being paid to deliver, and what activities will get me there today? The third step, again, is to organize. It's imperative that you organize your thinking to develop a performance script for the day. To do this, first identify a realistic list of the specific things, results, and activities that you must accomplish this day. You will have control over some of these things, but others will be dictated to you by your job, your boss, and your coworkers. Once you have these activities mapped out, realistically estimate the amount of time you'll need to complete each one. And please note that most of us bite off more than we can chew, so try to be generous as possible as you set up your time estimates to avoid frustration later. Next, determine who you will need to include in each activity if it's to actually be accomplished. Make sure that you pull key people into this thought process, as it can make a real difference in the outcome. Once your activities are planned, you know roughly how long each one should take, and you've figured out the key people you'll need to involve, determine what activities need to come off your list. These activities can include anything that can be done at a better time, anything that can be delegated, and anything that is simply of lesser importance. Going through the selection process will ensure that you are developing and devoting your valuable time to the things that really matter. Finally, prioritize the remaining items on your list in order of importance and determine a plan of attack for your day that you will write down. The product of this process is what I call a performance script for the day. Now, I know this sounds like a lot of work, but in reality, once you get in the habit of conducting daily stops and developing your performance scripts for yourself, you can become highly efficient at mapping out your day. And now you're ready to move to the final step of the daily stop exercise, perform. It's time to put your performance script into action. And as your day unfolds and you implement your plan of attack, take 5 minutes halfway through your day to review your plan and make adjustments accordingly. By the end of the day, you just might be amazed at the progress you've made by intentionally choosing how to spend and invest your time. Chances are good that you won't have completed everything on your list of to-dos. But don't worry, that's normal. It's impossible to plan for the interruptions that you will inevitably face. The point here is that you've made the best possible use of your time with the things that you can control. Now, at the end of your day, take 5 minutes to do a brief review of what you did and did not accomplish. Those 5 minutes will be invaluable in helping you to develop your plan for the next day. The stop method is just the right approach for avoiding the kind of career nightmare that I described in the opening scenario of this lecture, the one in which you think you're doing a great job and wind up getting laid off. The method is just as worthwhile to use if you love your job as if you're miserable and hate your boss, because either situation can lead to bad results if you don't exercise good self-leadership and truly understand your position within your organization. So do yourself a huge favor and stop. Take the time on a regular basis to figure out exactly what your boss really wants and needs from you and how to use your time in the best way to produce those results. Do you really need to be working late and coming in on weekends? Or have you misunderstood what's expected of you? Have you talked to your boss to confirm your understanding of your job? Could you be doing anything differently to improve your performance? And do you have a way of measuring that performance so you can make sure that your impressions of how you're doing are indeed accurate? These are questions that we should all be asking ourselves, so build them into your routine. What makes the stop method especially valuable is that it's straightforward. It doesn't involve complex algorithms or data crunching. And it's realistic because let's face facts. There are no magic bullets or secret elixirs or pixie dust fixes for improving performance. The only real way to go about it is with careful thought, planning, and follow through. By spending just 25 minutes a day on doing that, you can achieve wonders. And keep in mind that 25 minutes out of a 9-hour workday is only 4.62% of that day. Our research on high-performance leaders clearly shows that when people use that small percentage of each day to stop, they are rewarded with greater job satisfaction, improved working relationships, reduced stress levels, and most importantly, a significant improvement in both the quality and quantity of their performance. In fact, we've found that by investing less than 5% of your workday in the stop process, you can improve your performance by anywhere from 12% to well over 30%, which is a pretty good return on your investment. The beauty of studying organizational behavior is that the lessons we learn can be applied in almost any organization or situation in which people need to work together. If you can learn to lead yourself and others to consistently achieve the results that your job requires, you'll be highly valued by your organization. So I want to call you out and challenge you to make a real commitment to practicing your own stop exercise on a regular basis. It's not only a great way to take control of your time and performance, but it's also the first step towards mastering the art of operating and leading effectively within your organization. This is all about taking control of your own organizational behavior. So listen, learn, and lead well.
This lecture is titled, The Value of Great Leadership.
When I was 14, I had the opportunity to go hiking at a Boy Scout camp in Philmont, New Mexico. Now, if you've ever gone hiking with a large group, you know that the two most important people are at the head and tail of the line of march. The one at the head of the line makes sure that everyone is moving in the right direction and the one at the tail makes sure that no one gets left behind. We started our hike with an adult at the head and an adult at the tail. But on our second day out, the adult who was leading the hike asked me to take the tail position. This was a great compliment and an opportunity for me, and I silently vowed that no one would ever fall behind me. Well, we hiked up a mountain for a good 7 hours, and everything seemed to be going great, until suddenly, near the end of the day, the scout in front of me stopped dead in his tracks and screamed, "We're lost! We're lost!" I'd been paying close attention to keeping this guy in my sight ahead of me. But as it turned out, he hadn't been paying close attention to the people in front of him. And he had taken a wrong turn on a switchback. So here we were, lost on the side of a mountain with the sun going down. After a few suitable moments of panic, we hunkered down and we built a fire. And fortunately, after several hours went by, we were rescued. But the experience left me with a valuable lesson that has proven useful many occasions in my life. Be careful whom you follow. Effective leadership is essential in just about any organization. It's a skill for which some people have a natural talent, but it's also an ability that can be cultivated. So in this lecture, I would like to share with you the most important things that I've learned about leadership during my 30-year career of studying, coaching, working with, and developing great leaders across a wide variety of organizations. Let's start by thinking about what effective leadership looks like. Who would you say was a great leader? What name pops into your head? May I be somewhat presumptuous and throw out some names and see if any of them made your list? How about Abraham Lincoln? What about General Dwight D. Eisenhower? Martin Luther King Jr.? Margaret Thatcher? Mother Teresa? Maybe Bill Gates? Now ask yourself, why did you put the people you've chosen on your list? There's a good chance that they made history by doing something great, and that they demonstrated characteristics, noble qualities, for example, vision, tenacity, courage, the ability to inspire and motivate others, perseverance, creativity and innovation, and game-changing problem-solving. Now, what if I reframe the question and I ask you to think of the best leader that you've ever worked for during your career? Who pops into your head? What was it that made this leader that you worked for so great? Are his or her qualities the same as the ones I listed for great world leaders, or are they different? Chances are good that for the most part, they're pretty much the same. I've found that over the years that there's a great deal to be learned by looking at the effective leaders who are all around us. Why? Because they tend to use the very specific skill sets and practices to get great results from the people that they work with. And once you understand those skills and practices, you can make yourself into an effective leader too. But first, let's consider why leadership is so important. Wherever I travel these days, people are talking about leadership. More and more organizations are making it quite clear that they no longer want managers, supervisors, or administrators. They want leaders. There's a wide body of literature and research that tells us why this is the case. The practice of leadership is becoming increasingly important in our ultra-competitive marketplace, as effective leaders can have a dramatic impact on a wide range of critically important organizational performance variables. Leadership can impact innovation and creativity, change and transformation, productivity and efficiency, employee turnover, workforce motivation, and job satisfaction, just to name a few key components of business success. Good leaders tend to bring out the best in all of us, and they typically make good things happen. And sorry to say, poor and ineffective leaders tend to make our work lives problematic or maybe even horrible when things are already challenging enough. In fact, they can make it tough to get out of bed, come to work, and keep a positive attitude and actually get our work done. Now, there are many theories of leadership, and in my experience, no single one captures all the aspects of this complex topic. But when you take all of these leadership theories and models into account, they can provide us with keen insight into the complexities associated with one person influencing the behavior of others. Let's start by defining what a leader is. A leader is someone who influences others towards the achievement of goals and desired outcomes, or an individual who causes others to do things they might not otherwise do, or someone who makes things happen and gets results with and through people. Ideally, a leader is someone who has the talent and character to influence others in productive and positive ways. Although one does not have to look too far into history or the newspapers to find plenty of leaders who use their talents for destructive and even evil purposes. Here's an important question about leadership for you to consider. Why would I want to follow you if you were my boss? During my career, I've asked this question of over 25,000 business leaders, and here are some of the most common responses. I know where we're going, and I'll help you get there. I will work hard to get you the resources that we need to be successful. I will teach you everything I know, and I'll help you develop. I will listen to you and keep you in the loop. I will help you succeed. I'll empower you to make your own decisions. You can trust me. I could go on, but the point here is that we all know on some level that leadership is all about connecting with people and doing the things that our followers need from us so that they can be successful. And remember, successfully delivering desired results is the key to career success and survival. At its core, effective leadership is always based on the interaction of two critically important factors. The first factor is a leader's competency, and the second factor is a leader's character. And if you don't believe me, consider your own list of reasons why people would be willing to follow you. If you're like most people, the things you've included have everything to do with your competency and your character rather than the position you hold or your title. We all know a leader is competent when he or she possesses the requisite skills and talents necessary to successfully lead people to achieve desired results in a given situation. Or stated somewhat differently, the leader knows what he or she is doing. If you've ever worked for an incompetent or bungling boss, you know that things can get pretty crazy when the wrong person is in charge. Now, leaders have character when they possess the moral and ethical underpinnings necessary to do the right thing and lead people in a principled fashion. When leaders have character, it means that their people can count on them to do the right thing. A boss who lacks character and a strong moral compass can make a work environment into a very, very disturbing, distressing, and distrustful place. When taken together, competency and character create what I have come to call a leader's trustworthiness. And when people trust their leader, good things happen. When a leader's competency and character are in place, they can have a powerful impact on the leader's followers, causing them to be motivated, supportive, and even loyal to their boss and organization. Conversely, when we find ourselves working for a leader we deem untrustworthy because of a lack of competency or character, our focus shifts from doing our job and getting results to finding ways to make up for our boss's shortcoming. So in the end, a trustworthy leader is in a greater position to have a positive influence on the people in his or her charge, regardless of the industry, organizational level, or functional business area. Now, any serious study of leadership wouldn't be complete without addressing some of the more important leadership theories. So let me highlight six key leadership schools of thought that can make a real difference in your understanding of leadership. As you'll see, these theories can provide us with some key takeaways. First, there's the trait leadership school. Early efforts to understand leadership success focused on the leader's personal traits and characteristics. This was called the great person theory of leadership. The belief was that if people possessed certain traits, they would be more likely to be successful in a leadership role. Now, traits are the distinguishing personal characteristics of a leader, and research has shown that traits such as a desire to lead others, intelligence and job-relevant knowledge, honesty and integrity, creativity, ambition and drive, optimism and self-confidence, as well as flexibility, are all linked to leadership success. Now, possessing these traits does not necessarily mean that a person is destined to be a great leader, but it does suggest that successful leaders have characteristics that set them apart from other people. So here's the key takeaway. It's critically important for all of us to know our strengths and our weaknesses as leaders. If you're serious about being a successful leader, you will need to develop the necessary talent, skills, and persona required of us for any given leadership position we hold. Next, there's the behavioral leadership school. One of the most broadly researched leadership theories focuses on two key dimensions of leader behavior: the leader's concern for task and concern for people. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever worked for a boss who is completely task-oriented, but it's safe to say that they spent a lot of time setting aggressive goals, planning and organizing activities, delegating work, supervising progress, and measuring performance. And while these are all critically important leadership activities, these activities alone are not enough for a person to be truly effective in their leadership role. When a person is completely task-oriented, working for him or her can turn into a working for Darth Vader scenario, and it won't be a whole lot of fun. This leadership school makes a very strong case that leaders can and must also demonstrate a real concern for people. People-oriented leaders work to create a warm and social rapport with employees. They respect the feelings of others, and they demonstrate trust in their people. They emphasize ongoing employee involvement and participation, and they demonstrate sensitivity to the needs of others. Be aware, though, while having concern for people sounds great, when a leader does not counterbalance these activities with the concern for getting the work done, trouble is not far behind. Leaders who place all their concern on building happy, people-centered workplaces without an equal concern for getting the work done are frequently called country club leaders, and their ability to deliver results is often in jeopardy. So here's another key takeaway. It's very clear that every leader must balance their concern for the task of getting results with a genuine concern for their employees. In other words, these activities are not mutually exclusive. In fact, they complement each other quite nicely. And then there's the contingency or situational leadership school. This school is actually a collection of numerous leadership theories, all of which make it very clear that there's no one best approach to being an effective leader. In this theoretical camp, an effective leader is one who takes into account the circumstances under which they're asked to lead and then develops an appropriate leadership style to meet the demands of that given situation. Research in this school has identified a number of critically important factors that can impact a leader's ability to have a positive impact on a group of followers. These factors can include the leader's working relationships with group members, the nature of the task to be performed, and whether or not the followers actually need the leader to get their work done. In addition, the leader's position, power to reward and punish, the skill and motivation of the followers, and the nature of the overall work environment are all specific factors that can impact a leader's ability to influence a group. Research has clearly revealed that the same leader can have a significantly greater impact in a positive circumstance than in a more challenging situation. In a nutshell, Leadership is not a one-size-fits-all practice, but rather it all depends on the situation. So the key takeaway is this. It's critically important that a leader diagnose and clearly understand the dynamics of the work group that they're being asked to lead and the circumstances under which they're being asked to operate. This situational awareness puts a leader in a position to appropriately adjust their leadership style and behavior to situational demands. There's also a transformational or charismatic school of leadership. This makes a compelling case that certain leaders can have a powerful and lasting impact on the followers because of the passion and the personal charisma that they possess. These leaders energize their followers by creating a compelling vision of the future and articulating a strategy to bring that vision to life. Many people would put President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, Lee Iacocca, and Stephen Jobs in this category of leadership. These leaders had great enthusiasm, passion, and self-confidence, and the ability to drive change and be inspirational. They demonstrate a personal commitment to the mission and a willingness to take risks to make things happen. And those are just a few of the qualities that certain leaders possess that can have a powerful impact on their ability to influence others and deliver desired results. The key takeaway here is this. Great leaders use their view of the future and their personalities in positive and powerful ways to impact their people. So never underestimate the impact that a compelling vision, a meaningful plan, commitment, and passion can have on the people that you are in charge of leading. And then there's the results-based leadership school. This school embraces the approach recommended by Stephen Covey, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Start with the end in mind. This growing leadership school works in reverse by first identifying the desired goals and outcomes that leaders must achieve for success, and then identifying the specific behaviors and practices that will enable them to move their followers in that direction. Some people say that this school is simply a combination of the behavioral and contingency schools of leadership theory, and I agree with them. This camp makes a very persuasive case that an effective leader will clearly identify the results that their work group must achieve and then identify and align the specific leadership behaviors that are most important to helping followers perform the tasks that are necessary for success. This school makes it very clear, regardless of a leader's level in the organization, it's their responsibility to engage in the activities that will help their people succeed. Key takeaway? As a leader, remember that you are being paid to deliver desired results to your enterprise, and that it's incumbent on you to engage in the leadership activities that will help your people perform in an optimal fashion. Finally, there's the psychological or emotional intelligence leadership school. Researchers have long argued that successful leaders have strong cognitive intelligence and higher than average IQs. Recently, though, a growing body of research has made a very strong case that the leader's emotional intelligence is equally important, if not more so, to a leader's success. As we've already discussed in this course, emotional intelligence refers to people's ability to perceive, identify, understand, and successfully manage emotions in themselves and in their relationships with others. Emotional intelligence is essential for anyone in developing good 360-degree working relationships, but it's especially important in leadership, in that it can play a dominant role in a leader's ability to connect and relate to the people that he or she is responsible for leading. The key takeaway for this last school of leadership is that as a leader, it's imperative that you know and understand how to work and connect with all kinds of people, and that it's important to use and understand your emotions and those of others to facilitate improved working relationships. Understanding the human and feeling side of business will be a big predictor of your ability to deliver results and be successful over your career. So now you've got a clear sense of the different ways that leadership is viewed by people who study it for a living. But how do those theories jive with the way leadership is actually experienced by the people who lead and the people who are led by them every day in the workplace? Let's go back to the question I asked you at the start of this lecture. Who is the best leader that you've ever worked for during your career, and what was it that made this leader so great? Compare your answers with the research findings from one of my all-time favorite research studies. In this study, I explored the same question, engaging over 500 managers who participated in over 100 focus groups as part of a management development experience. Our goal was to identify the attributes of great leaders with whom they had worked during their careers. Interestingly, there was a great deal of consensus around what made their top-rated leaders great. And while the qualities that the participants identified generally supported the academic view of leadership, they also refined it in some very important ways. First off, the study participants told us that the best leaders are mission and results driven. Great leaders realize that the first and foremost important job of any leader is to create focus and a clear sense of purpose for their people. This clear mission or vision mindset is used to create an overarching sense of this is who we are and this is where we are going. Whether it's Abraham Lincoln's unrelenting focus on saving the Union or Henry Ford's goal to build an affordable car for the masses, great leaders create a vision that their followers can know, understand, and believe in. Great leaders also translate that mission into clear performance expectations for their people, and they empower them to take action. One of the hallmarks of great leaders is the practice of clarifying individual performance responsibilities and expectations. As simple as it may sound, leaders receive great praise and even adulation for the modest act of letting their people know exactly what is expected of them. During the Second World War, General Dwight Eisenhower was renowned for his ability to manage huge projects such as the D-Day landing. He had an uncanny talent for effectively delegating work and letting each person know exactly what they needed to do for the big effort to be successful. The best leaders make people their top priority. Most participants in our study said that great leaders have the ability to balance concern for task and getting things done with great concern for their people. The best leaders know how to personally connect with the individuals that they are responsible for leading in ways that create people power, commitment, motivation, job satisfaction, and engagement. John Chambers, the longtime CEO of Cisco Systems, is famous for his emotional intelligence and his passion for connecting with everyone in his organization. And his organization makes it a top priority to hire and develop leaders who do the same, because they understand that motivated people and purposeful social networks are the key to success. The best leaders also build teams, and they foster cooperation. Great leaders are recognized for their prowess in knowing how to get other people to come together, cooperate, collaborate, pull together, join forces, unite, and work as a team. In this regard, here's a great leader whom you've probably never even heard of. Charles Coffin, the founder and CEO of General Electric, began his career in the shoe business. But because of his uncanny ability to get scientists to work together and cooperate in research laboratories, he is credited with creating one of the most enduring and widely emulated high-tech enterprises in the world. While many leaders talk about teamwork, the best leaders know how to create and actually nurture teamwork. Now, it's important to note that great leaders develop themselves and the people around them. Great leaders were described by study participants as possessing the requisite skills and talents to effectively meet the ongoing demands and challenges of their jobs. The best leaders have the competency, the capability, the know-how and aptitude and skill to perform their important work with great acumen. And they take their personal and professional development very seriously. The best leaders also have a penchant for investing time, energy, and effort in helping the people that work for them reach their full potential. The best leaders make it a priority to use all of the organizational resources at their disposal to help their people develop. Great leaders prepare people for battle and they streamline their operations. The best leaders frequently receive great acclaim for their willingness to properly equip and prepare their people for success. These leaders take the time to plan and effectively communicate those strategies to their people, both to create a sense of ownership and so that everyone knows exactly what is coming. These same leaders take the time and expend the necessary energy and resources to ensure that their people are properly equipped with the tools, the technology, and the training that they need to be successful. The automotive genius Henry Ford was a pioneer in training and properly equipping his workforces so that they could build cars fast and cheap. Now, the very best leaders also are known for their integrity and their transparency. Great leaders are consistently described as having character, integrity, honesty, truthfulness, and for being ethical. The very best leaders are trustworthy in that they demonstrate principled behavior even when no one is watching, and that they show that their word is always reliable and dependable. The co-founder of Hewlett-Packard, David Packard, was recognized as one of the top CEOs of all time, not just because of his business prowess, but because of his passionate belief in the dignity of people and setting high ethical standards for himself and the members of his entire organization. And to support this position, our research has consistently shown that we all want to follow and work for people that we can respect, whether it's the CEO of our company or our immediate supervisor. It's also important to note that great leaders use their time wisely and they try to create a work-life balance. One of our more provocative findings was that great leaders described by our study participants were credited with not wasting time and with operating in a fashion that helped them create and maintain a work-life balance for themselves. And importantly, they did the same for their people in spite of the fact that they were in exceptionally demanding jobs. The very best leaders worked hard to maintain this tightrope balance and also encourage the people who work for them to do the same. This balance is critically important for long-term success in business and, more importantly, in life. Finally, great leaders bring passion and mojo to whatever they do. These leaders demonstrate passion, energy, excitement, enthusiasm, gusto, and mojo for what they're trying to get done. Great leaders go about their business in highly motivated fashion with great vitality that creates great energy, momentum, and drive for the people who follow them. When you hear people talk about leaders like Sam Walton, Bill Gates, or Michael Dell, they will inevitably describe them as truly excited and passionate about their mission, their work, and the lives that they are changing. And this passion and mojo creates competitive advantage. There are, of course, many ideas and theories about leadership, and the best ones are the ones that work for you. But our findings make it pretty clear that great leaders are all about making a difference and helping other people experience success. Allow me to share one more perspective on leadership from our research. This one comes from a successful healthcare leader who participated in our great leader study and who I think summarizes this subject rather nicely. He told us, "I've had a couple of outstanding leaders during my career, but the best was all about helping me get things done, seeing the big picture, working on a real team, and developing my skills so that I could get promoted. He was all about helping me be the best person and performer that I could possibly be. and he taught me a lot about integrity, caring for others, and thinking ahead. He changed my career trajectory. Now that you know the key ingredients of great leadership, is there anything stopping you from becoming that type of leader and developing and perfecting your talents so that you just might end up on somebody else's best leaders list someday if you're not already there? I don't think so. Listen, learn, and lead well.
This lecture is titled Emotional Intelligence in the Workplace.
Several years ago, I was asked to work with a plant manager who had absolutely horrible interpersonal skills. He had been very successful up to that point in his career and was promoted into a new position because he was a technical and financial genius. But now that he was in charge, his lack of interpersonal skills had turned off everyone that he had contact with, and his operation had become an unproductive industrial soap opera. It almost seemed like he was trying to be difficult. He wasn't friendly. He was dismissive, domineering, argumentative. He talked down to people, and he was an exceptionally unpleasant person to be around because of his sarcastic and his cynical nature. It was so intolerable that when he gave all of his employees frozen turkeys for Thanksgiving, one was hurled through his glass office door after hours. A railroad spike attached a note to the turkey that read, "You are destroying our plant and you can't buy us off with turkeys." Hopefully, you'll never have a job in a workplace like that. But even in less extreme situations, workplace relationships have the potential to create real drama, problems, and even pain. Because some people either don't know how or don't care to think about how to work effectively with others. So let me ask you a question about the relationships that you form in your workplace.